Welcome again to PCP. It's PCP 393. Now today we have a bit of a special. We have an interview and lots of fantastic tracks from one of my favourite bands, The Pocket Gods. Let's get started with this. This is Perfect Blue. So there we are, that was The Pocket Gods, and on the line we have Mark Lee. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Pete. How you doing, mate?
I'm all right. Now, it's amazing. You've got this book out, you've got the a new album out, and I've just been counting up. I worked on that. I looked in the back of your book. You've done 23 albums and 14 EPs. That is amazing, mate.
I'm trying to go for the record at most number of songs on iTunes.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
That's my ultimate aim.
All right.
Some way to go, but I'm more of a professor of quantity rather than quality.
there's something about your quality. I mean, I'm going to pick up the book here because I've got the book in front of me. It's called Weird, The Life and Times of a Pocket God. And you have in the back of it, and I love this bit. This is one of my favourite bits, actually. The Nub Manifesto.
Oh, yeah.
How you do the recordings. Music must be recorded on a home console studio. Laptops not allowed in. Must be recorded in two takes, no cutting, pasting, everything. It's just amazing. I mean, so literally, how did you develop that? Was it sort of just the fact that you didn't like editing, or what? Or you want to give me an idea, or what?
It's just to develop my own technique over the years, I guess. That's what worked for me, and trying to keep the rawness and edginess in in music and a lo-fi sound, I guess, as opposed to overproduced or auto-tuned kind of stuff that's in the charts. And even, you know, even indie bands are going that way nowadays, kind of losing their... I don't know. I like the homemade kind of ethos as well. I mean, we're not against laptops and stuff. I mean, I'm doing this interview now on my Apple Mac, so. But I think for the purposes of recording, you know, throwaway, trashy, punky, lo-fi songs, I think you start doing them on Pro Tools and stuff like that, it kind of might lose something.
So the whole thing, yeah.
And I guess it's my version of the Dogma school of film, setting my own rules, so to speak.
Cool.
Anyone out there wants to follow my ethos, let me know and I'll send you a manifesto. Change music.
excellent stuff. Anyway, so let's get back. So you got this book out. Now, what on earth prompted you to write your story? Why did that come about?
I was writing my it's more of an autobiography about my childhood and stuff like that, and I did that and then realized it wouldn't get published for legal reasons,
right?
So I won't go too much into it. It just, there are hints in the book, and then I decided to turn it into something a bit more positive and about the music, because the Pocket Gods have been going 12 years, which I think is quite a long time for bands that hasn't really made it. Has kind of made it but not really. And to keep like an unsigned indie band going for that long is, I don't know, something special, I think, really. So, and the book is about history of the band and also, you know, about my other bands I've been in and things like that. And, mm-hmm. You know, I like name dropping and stuff like that.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And I mean, it's good. I mean, I love it. I mean, I have to say, I mean, I saw it and I thought, well, you know, I'm not quite sure if I'm going to enjoy this, but I absolutely say yes. I loved every minute of it, and it made me laugh, and it made me, I wouldn't say cry, but I mean, there's some pretty personal stuff you put in there. I mean, was that cathartic, getting rid of that, or was it hard?
No, I was trying to keep it as honest and as possible, really, with this sort of book, I think, in trying to, not... I don't know. You keep it truthful and honest. It's been a bit too much in places, but it's. I wanted to get the gritty realness of it all, and I'm just hoping people can relate to it. I've had some good comments from people who've been in bands and been in similar situations, and so I was getting good feedback from those sort of people, which is good.
Yeah, indeed it is. Indeed it is. And I think it's great. So let's have some bit of music then. So it's it's like choosing your own children, really. So I've asked you to choose some tracks, and you've given me six tracks that you chose, which is interesting because I have to say, apart from one, these are not tracks I would have chosen. So it's a good job that I've asked you. And then sometimes it's nice to get the artist to come up with the tracks, because I will obviously choose different things for different reasons. So. Tell us about the first track you've chosen. Which one we're going to have? What do you reckon?
We'll have Moon, I think.
Right.
Quite a new song. Wrote that. I normally write songs about weird stuff like UFOs or aliens or sex toys or things like that. But this one I wrote about my 2-year-old who's. Favourite word was moon. She like pointed to the sky going moon. So I wrote it about her, really, which is a bit kind of sentimental for me, which I'm not really. So I've chosen that for, because it's a unique Pocket God song, I guess.
Right, let's have a listen to that then.
She's so sweet, love. The way she moves, she makes me smile. Makes me smile. Never thought I'd be so happy and carefree. I love her so. I love her so. When she says moon, when she says moon.
So that was Moon, a new song by the Pocket Guzz, and as you say, you know, inspired by your 2-year-old, and you've got a 2-year-old and you've got twins now, haven't you?
Yeah.
And that must be quite a challenge.
Yeah, it's a busy little house. Trying to get rich quick so I can buy a bigger place.
Right.
Yeah, so please buy my book.
please do. It's a good book. How's Claire, your wife, and of course the bass player?
Yeah, she's taking it from the band at the moment.
Yeah,
handful, but she aims to return one day. She's doing okay.
So let's talk a bit more about you then. So when you came from Huddersfield, which I actually didn't actually realise when we first met. So you came from Huddersfield. You spent some time in Peterlee.
Yeah.
You then went to Sussex, and then you went back to Huddersfield. So you've sort of been around a bit and
done places. Been around quite a lot, yeah.
And then I hadn't actually realised that the whole Huddersfield area was what Nub Country was all about, because I always thought Nub Country was St Albans. But tell us a bit about that.
Because Claire and I moved back up to Huddersfield when we got together, because it was too expensive living down in St Albans, and we rented a big house up there, and we had a 3-story house, and the kitchen was turned into a bit of a studio. And the Nub Country we kind of named because all the number plates of the cars in the area ended in UB, and so we used to play a game trying to find these number plates, and Nub was the ultimate number plates I get.
All right.
It's been a bit of a childish game, but that's where the Nub comes from, so we called it Nub Country. And so when I started the record label, I called it Nub Country Records.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It makes sense. When I used to play Yellow Car with my daughter, she used to sort of, poker every time there's Yellow Car, but now she's a bit bigger. Every time she sees Yellow Car, she just thumps me rather hard in the arm, which is a bit painful. So we'll look forward to that when your kids get a bit older, mate.
It's poo on me at the moment, so.
Exactly. Yeah, there's lots of that. You got to get over. Yeah, you still got lots of that to go. Yeah, unfortunately. But sod. I'm beyond that stage. Thank goodness, I'm well out of that now. But good luck to you. So going back to you then. So you it sounds like you've always been a musician. And but from reading the book, your first band, you were a drummer. Then you became a bass player. Then you got into guitar. So have you always been musical then?
Not really. No. I guess. Bit of a late start. Maybe when I was 15, 16, I started messing around a bit. My parents didn't encourage me. They were in show business, and they encouraged my brother more than me. So he said he was the talented one, and I was the one who was clever, so I should study and stuff like that.
Right.
But I kind of rebelled against it a little bit by trying to surreptitiously record, goffy demos in my little 4-track, sending them off to magazines and stuff. That's how I started, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So probably about 15, 16 started messing around with guitars and bass. My parents had a music shop, which helped as well, so I just used instruments that were in there.
And I started
playing drums and got into a Joy Division covers band, which is quite hard work because I was quite fat and unfit, and all these songs are Joy Division songs are quite hard to play.
They seemed deceptively simple, but I imagine, because I'm a drummer as well, so I mean, you know, if you have a go at it, it just kills you, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So, yeah, I've always done music since then, really.
Mm.
Probably always will.
Yes, indeed. Well, I hope so. Absolutely hope so, yeah. So let's have another track then. Let's give us another track. Which one should we have next?
We shall have Ballad of the Peshwari Nan. Which is a song I wrote and about my local curry house in Huddersfield. My wife said, write a song about this curry house. She said, write a song about Peshwari Nan, which she tried for the first time, which she liked. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. So I went back and wrote it and recorded it. And I thought, oh, John Peel might like this. So I sent it off to John Peel. And probably 2 years after I sent him the demo, he gave me a phone call. And it's all
indeed. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Maybe it would have been less than 2 years if he called it the Ballad of the Prawn Tandoori, or Prawn Biryani was his favourite, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think it was. But anyway, you got the man himself, didn't you, to talk to you? Let's hear about that after we've heard the track. Then this is the Ballad of the Peshwari Nan.
It's about 11:30, and I'm blind in the belly. We don't have no telly. We can go out on Fridays. Head up the hill past the junk shop, made of wool and wood and stuff. We'll contemplate the meaning of life. And I covered you like the holy snail of Sunday. And I want you blind there, I'll fold you my way. I'll treasure all your juices. Fold your mind, babe. I'll lick out all your juices. Get undercover your ancient secrets of the magic yeast. And I once learned the lingo. There's only two words that rhyme with that. One day I'll be back. Play your records in the sack. Have breakfast in the pub, or the garden center hub. If only I was a famous dog, barking mad, ruff, ruff, ruff. Then maybe I'll get the mystery, the key to the non-Peshwari. Peshwari. Peshwari. Just a simple rainy dough. I'll count to ten and I'll be gone. From your ears, from your eyes in a flash. Just buy my records, give me cash. Just buy my records, give me the cash. Ballad of the Peshwari Nan.
So that was Ballad of the Peshwari Nan. So tell us a story about John Peel bringing up then.
We got the demo, Ballad of the Peshwari Nan, and a couple of other songs. And I think I was on a way back from a gig in Leeds. I was doing Pocket Gods up there, the Yorkshire version, Yorkshire franchise. And it was after a gig, a place called Joseph's Well in Leeds, and we were driving home. And I checked my turned my mobile on, and I checked my answer. There was an answer phone message. So I thought, oh, who's this? So I played it, and it was like, so it's John Peel from Radio 1. I'm trying to get hold of the Pocket Gods. We like your tape. I'll try and call you again. And my first initial reaction was, it must be a wind-up. One of my mates playing a joke. But it actually was John Peel. I played it to everyone, and get the
Have
message.
You still got a recording of it?
I don't know, unfortunately. No,
that's
I did
a shame, really. Yeah.
I should have done. Yeah, I'll do that. I still got his, still got a little post-it note with his home address and home telephone number on, which he gave me. So I couldn't put that in the book, unfortunately, because his wife still lives there. So.
Yes. Well, I having said that, though, I think everybody doesn't actually know where she lives in near Stowmarket, because they do say, oh, you drive past the John Peel property. So, yeah.
It's down in Suffolk, anyway.
Yes, Stowmarket, yes. Well, I actually met Sheila just a short while ago, and I was actually sort of in awe. A little bit nervous, actually, meeting her, because and I told her that, and she thought I was daft. But that's Sheila. She's a very down to earth girl, you know, and great fun as well. So, but you didn't get played by John, did you? Did you? I don't think you did, because he'd gone by then, hadn't he?
He died. Like I sent him a load of CDs, which he requested, and then he went on holiday to Peru, I think it was, working holiday, and sadly didn't come back. So,
what a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, which the book is quite honest, because at the time when I found out that he died, I was quite selfish about it, thinking, oh no, there goes my big chance, as well as it's a great loss for the music world. I was thinking, oh, yeah, it's odds law, isn't it?
Yeah, it's understandable. It's completely understandable. I mean, but that's the way it goes. But anyway, but you have had some play on the radio. I know, who is it?
It's Hugh Stevens, his kind of successor, Radio 1, Hugh Stevens, he played us quite a lot, which is quite good. I think because John Peel's producer, Louise Cattenhorn, she stayed on producing Hugh's show, and she knew of us, so that was quite good. That was quite good for quite a while. I mean, as I say in the book, we got quite blasé about it. It was like, yeah, we got played in Radio 1 again. Whereas, you know, at the beginning it was really, really exciting, and we should have kept that kind of being excited about it, but we kind of got a bit blasé about it, saying, oh, yeah, just made it one again, and, you know, which is incredible, really, because not that many bands ever get played in Radio 1, especially unsigned indie bands.
True.
I do regret taking it a bit lightly, I guess. I don't anymore. I'm grateful for any radio play. So I've learnt my lesson.
I suppose we all learn our lesson sometimes a bit too late, but that's the way it goes, isn't it? Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, so you mentioned you know the Yorkshire franchise or whatever you said of the Pocket Goods. Do you know how many versions of the Pocket Goods have actually been then?
No, have you actually counted? I mean, no, I haven't. No, but there is quite a lot.
You haven't got one of those family tree things written down somewhere.
Yeah, well, no, I do list all the personnel that I've played in the book.
Yes, I saw that.
There's about 40 odd.
Yeah.
I'm just getting on the lines of maybe who's had lots of change of band members. Maybe someone like one of the old rock bands, like not Jethro Tull, but someone of that ilk.
Yes.
One of those prog bands to keep changing members. But I guess my ultimate indie lo-fi capitalist dream is to have a Pocket Gods franchise in every town or city, have their own Pocket Gods.
Oh, I see. anybody can be a Pocket God then.
Absolutely, they've got this mad dream of doing that, and I would provide them the rubbish songs and teach them how to sing out of key and perfect their lo-fi recording technique with a nub manifesto.
Fantastic. And they can be
indie cult heroes in their own town. It can be done.
So you can walk into a local pub and find a band that says Pocket Gods brackets Brighton Branch or something like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, have you got any listeners out there that want to form the franchise? Yeah. Get in touch.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Let's have another track then. What should we have now?
You will have. Jumble Party, did I send you that one?
You didn't, but I was going to play it anyway.
Yeah, we'll have Jumble Party.
Jumble Party, which I think is still, and you mentioned it's one of your favourite songs. It's still my favourite song. It's just nuts. Tell us more about that after we hear it. Let's all go to the Jumble Party. Let's all go searching for treasure.
Let's all go to the jungle party. Let's all go searching for treasure. Let's all go to the jungle party. Let's all go searching for treasure. Jungle party, jungle party, jungle party, jungle waffle. Jungle party, jungle party, jungle party, jungle party.
I can't get out, I can't get out, can't get out, I'm trapped. Can't get out, can't get out, can't get out, I'm trapped. Can't get out, can't get out, can't get out, I'm trapped with my treasure. Steal my seeds of the leisure.
Belly old men with bulging sacks. Search for change and crash their cracks. Crowd sits our reduction minister. This experience feels quite sinister. Examine our treasure. Still no suits of velvet leisure. Souls are bruised but we're still fully. Put this down to rock and rolling. Jumble party, jumble party, jumble party, jumble party. Jumble party, jumble party, jumble party, jumble party.
Can't get out, can't get out, can't get out, I'm trapped. Can't get out, can't get out, can't get out, I'm trapped. Can't get out, can't get out, can't get out, I'm trapped. With a treasure, still no seats of velvet measure.
Let's all go to the jungle party. Let's all go to the jungle party. Let's all go to the jungle party. Let's all go to the jungle party.
Okay, so that was the excellent track Jumble Party. So tell us a bit. You tell us a bit of the story about that in the book. Tell us now what's up. That was all about.
That was great. That was it was me, Claire, and Annalise. That's Claire's cousin, and she came to live with us one summer down in Sandwich in St Albans, and we used to just hang out all the time because I wasn't working and she was at sixth form and Claire wasn't working either, so we just hung out all day in the garden and wrote songs and went to the pub, and it was good fun, halcyonic times. And one of the times we went to a local jumble sale in the village just for a laugh, really, and it was just like serious carnage. There's all these old dears on a mission to try and get this teddy bear and these soiled clothes and elbowing you out of the way. It was like, oh my lord, it was like being at the front row of a Metallica concert.
Right.
But with worse hygiene, it was just... And I remember Annalise had never been to anywhere like that before, and she saw this womble that she wanted, soft toy, and she just couldn't get it. The grannies were just beating her away. And it was a bit scary. And so after that, we were a bit scarred by that experience. So we went to our local pub, The Green Man, had lunch and wrote that song that afternoon.
Fantastic.
It was as simple as that, really. Jumble pot.
It's great. Yeah. I must admit, I love it. It's the sort of the total, you know, it's the madness that I get. I like about it. It's just totally... totally crazy, but that's what I like about your songs. They're just totally crazy. I haven't yet heard anybody that sounds quite like you. There's some people that try, but I just love it.
Yeah, thanks,
I'm a fan.
Like fans.
Yeah, good. Anyway, so before you were back in St Albans and you had Annalise and all that sort of stuff, you had a number of other bands. I mean, a band that sounded like in the book that almost made it. Was The High Ones, wasn't it? So it sounds like you almost got there.
Yeah, that was a great band, yeah, good fun. That was with my best mate, Nigel Parrington, and we almost got signed to a record label called Telstar Records. And we did a gig for them at Borderline in London, which was a fantastic gig we played. But the record label just wanted to sign up the girl drummer that we had, who was a fantastic drummer. And so the band split up after that, after our manager stole all our money.
Yes.
Put it in the book. I changed his name slightly so I don't get sued by him.
Oh, right, that's very wise. Very wise.
Like marketing manager at a well known football club now.
Careful. Allegedly.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of football clubs out there.
There are indeed. But you seem to have a thing about drummers, doesn't it? You seem to have this problem with drummers.
A problem with drummers?
Well, you simply have either you've got drummers that have got big egos, or you can't get the right drummer, or whatever it is. Is that because you're a drummer yourself? Yeah. They're never quite good.
I think drummers are kind of, they are integral to it. To a band, and it's hard getting the right one. We've played with some excellent drummers, but a drummer with an ego is no good for a band. We did have one drummer who we did an acoustic gig in St Albans once, and he turned up. We had our acoustic instruments, and he started setting his drum kit up at the front of the stage, so we would be behind him. I won't mention his name, but he's in the book.
Yeah. Not the sort of thing you expect, is it, really?
No, it was quite funny.
Yeah, it was funny, yeah.
And then we did have one drummer we auditioned, and he seemed like a really nice chap and talked a really good game, and he came around and listened to music, said his favourite drummer was Ringo, and talked all about drumming and stuff like that, and what his tracks he liked. And so we great, we'll get a rehearsal tomorrow. And we went to rehearsal, and he turned up, and it's like, serious, the guy mustn't have play drums ever. It sounded like someone falling downstairs with with five legs and two arms. It was just really, really bad. And we just looked around at each other thinking, this has got to be a wind-up. We've been filmed or something like that to gauge our reactions. And he wasn't. He was serious. He was like, oh, I'm a bit rusty. Right. Obviously we didn't take up his services, and then like a few weeks later one of the girls was relaying the story about this really bad drummer that auditioned for us, and she's slagging him off big time, and she turned round and there he was behind with his girlfriend.
Oh no,
classic timing, unlike
absolutely.
The drummer.
Absolutely. So have you ever played with a drum machine then?
I've ever played with a drum machine. Not live, but I do a lot of recording with a drum machine.
Oh, okay.
Which is loud in the Knob Manifesto, I hasten to add.
good.
Yeah, but you could. Yeah, drum machine's good.
So it's never Echo and the Pocket Gods then. You never sort of decided to have the take that live, like the Bonnie Mendy.
No, I think it's quite hard to make it work, to be honest. I know. Sisters of Mercy, the band used to be into, they used to do it quite well, but to make it work is quite hard, I think. I mean, it's probably easier nowadays when you've got drum loops and laptops and stuff, but in the days when it was just...
Yeah, but laptops aren't allowed in the manifesto, it says so here, I'm just checking. Laptops aren't allowed in the manifesto, so...
Yeah.
I suppose you wrote the manifesto, you can change it if you want to, but
yes, it's evolving.
It's evolving, absolutely.
Like the Liberal Democrats policies anyway.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started on that lot. Oh good, let's have another track.
Yeah, what's left? The Land of the Giants, that's another new song. And I guess this mellow one, it's about a family holiday we had in Great Yarmouth, and this fantastic place, model village called Merivale. And our daughter used to love going around there, and I thought, oh, this is great, we're walking around this place with all these little people and little houses, I feel like a giant. So I wrote a song called The Land of the Giants about it, and I thought it was quite an appropriate name of song for a band called The Pocket Gods.
Indeed. Let's hear that track.
Model village, you oldy worldy miniature pillage, live experience repeated and delirious. Let's play on the rides and the two-piece machines, the giants next to the little. Thank you. stupid Bethel towers and Snow White Castle. It's like a Gulliver pit stop by the sea. To look like giants, just to look like God. I've had enough. Village, the oldie worldie, miniature pillage, the novel experience, the quaint and delirious, we're all giants, next to the little folk, what's our world, in the land of the giants.
So that was Land of the Giants by the Pocket Gods, of course. Now, you mentioned a good name for the Pocket Gods. So how did the name the Pocket Gods come about then?
It was actually Nigel from the High Ones. It was one of the names he thought about for the band the High Ones, which we never used. And I always liked it. And when I came around to doing the Pocket Gods, I asked them for permission. Can I use that name? They said, yeah. I just like it because it's like we're kind of rock gods, but we're like tiny, quite don't take ourselves too seriously kind of gods. And I think that's what the Pocket Gods is all about, really. Which hopefully comes through in the book. Although it's quite ironic that to write a book, you obviously got to take yourself a bit seriously, especially when it's an autobiography. But a bit like Alan Partridge, I guess. But yeah, being in the band, I think the key thing is not to take yourselves too seriously. As soon as you do that, it does all start unraveling and ego start taking over. And that's just poop.
Yeah, very difficult indeed. So you mentioned Annie, who of course has been in the band for quite a long time. You said she was 15 when she started.
Yeah, we recorded some albums on Absinthe at the time, the Green Fairy.
Green Fairy, yes.
And so she came up and I think she spoke French, and that's why I kind of used her a little bit for that. And then she started playing guitar and stuff, and so it was quite good. And then, she had a really good voice, so we started doing some singing together, which worked really well.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I remember when I came and saw you at the, maybe doing that, when you did Lunch
Lo-Fi
Sci-Fi.
The Water Rats.
The Water Rats. I remember that she still has come up with the best ever response to an interview I've ever done. Do you remember it?
No, I don't. What was it?
I don't. I asked her. You said she was a sort of fairly new member of the band, and I said, "Well, so if you're a new member to the band, well, what do you bring to the band?" And she said, "Tits." And then yeah. Claire joined in as well, and I thought, "Well, yeah, I've been drinking all day before I even saw you that day, and it was just it was the best response I could have ever had." And I think me and Rowley, who were both there, were absolutely wetting ourselves at that point.
That's quite funny. Yeah,
it was very funny.
The girls were a bit like that.
It makes me wonder what your life is going to be like, mate. You've got how many girls have you got now in the house? You've got Claire, and obviously Annie's not there, but you've got a daughter as well, haven't you?
Got two daughters and a son now.
Blimey. So you're going to have three girls in the house and just you and your son. And your son are going to have to get out occasionally and find something else to do, I think.
That's it. And my wife's brother's got three daughters as well. So
blimey.
There's three other girl cousins. So, yeah, loads of them. Johnny the boy is a bit outnumbered, I think. But I'm sure he'll hold his own.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, let's have another song. What have we got left? We've got a few more. You want to choose another one?
Yeah, I'll do Dan Brown in Town, about the world's greatest literary figure since Chaucer or Shakespeare, I reckon.
Is that ironic, or is that...
It could be ironic, yeah.
It could be ironic. So you're not a fan, then?
No, I think he's great in a trashy, lo-fi kind of way.
Do you reckon he's going to manifesto a bit in there somewhere?
His books, but they're quite formulaic and poorly written. But we still read them, and they're still very good fun to read.
Yeah. Yeah, and he makes lots of money, bastard.
Yeah, he makes lots of money, which is always good. But
okay, let's have a listen to Dan Brown in Town then. Okay, so you mentioned Sandringtons, which is the area where you live in St Albans. So that you said that's been your home for quite a while. That's the sort of the centre. Now, am I correct in thinking you're playing another gig there in the next day or two or something?
I'm playing a gig at the Horn tomorrow to launch the book.
Uh-huh.
At the Horn, as part of St Albans Music City Week. And I've got an acoustic band together for the gig, which should be quite good, and featuring original members.
Ah,
so it's like one of these bands that reunites and gets some of the original members in the lineup.
So who are the original members then? Tell us who they are.
There's me, there's Bill Johnson on bass guitar, and there's Noel Story on keyboards. He was in the original lineup. So three of us from the original lineup.
And no drummer again?
Yeah, we have a drummer, the original lineup. Drummers from a band called the Metatrons, they're very good. They're from Hitchin. Right. And we've got a harmonica player and bongos on the last song.
Oh, right. Okay.
We've got a crazy bongo player called Bongolius Maximus. And we give him a solo in this funky song we do at the end. I'll just go, Bongolio, solio. And he does a solo.
And he goes off. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic. Funny. Very good. I was going to ask you a question, which is the of all the songs by the Pocket Gods, were they all written during the time of the Pocket Gods, or some of the songs reversions of things you did with the Hive Ones or older?
Yeah, there's a song called My Next High was than the high ones. And Telstar Girl was revamped from a high one song. I think they're the only two, and then the rest of them have since. Because the high one songs were mostly written by Nigel Parrington, and I used to write some of the music, guitar riffs and stuff like that for it.
Right.
But I did write a few as well, but he wrote most of the good ones. And then I started writing more when I did the Pocket Gods, which is one of the reasons why I did the Pocket Gods as well, to try and do my own stuff a bit more. Yeah.
And you mentioned the sort of that particular summer when, you know, you and well, everyone was out of work and you all sort of hang around. I mean, was that
2006,
because I was just looking at sort of, you know, as I said, all these albums, these 23 albums and 14 EPs, and there seems to be a huge amount of work coming out of you around that sort of 2007-2008 sort of period.
Yeah, right. That was probably the most prolific period. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have released 3 albums already this year. So 2012, I recorded a load of stuff last year with the knowledge that Twins were on the way, and that I'm probably doing too much recording. So I've got like 4 albums and 5 EPs to release this year, already recorded.
Blimey.
Yeah. So.
You don't sit still, do you? I don't know how you manage it, actually.
Some of it of dubious quality, but I'm just going for the record on iTunes. I don't care anymore.
So what is the record on iTunes? Do you know?
I don't know. I need to find out.
you better be careful, otherwise as long as you can beat the Grateful Dead, I dare say they've probably got loads of albums.
Yeah, they're probably up there, aren't they?
They're probably up there.
But I mean, I'm quite proud of the work we've done, because as well as the lo-fi indie pop, there's some prog albums out there. There's the Green Man Volume 1 and 2, which is pure kind of acid folk prog rock. And then we had our country period where we had a pedal steel player, and that's all quite good. So Pocket Gods, people think, oh, you're lo-fi punk, but we've done a lot of other stuff as well, which is always got like to change it a bit. I mean, I want to do a kind of techno electronic album, but I don't know.
That's the one thing you haven't done yet.
I don't know how I'm going to do that without a laptop or Pro Tools. Or I don't know how I'm going to quite pull that off.
You can have a different manifesto. You could release it under a different name or something.
Yeah, I could have a little sub clause in it, couldn't I? Yeah, that's an idea.
Excellent.
I can't ditch all my beliefs.
No. Well, and then it was like, was it Queen used to have the no synthesizers rule on their very early albums, and then of course they had synthesizers a bit later on. So you can change it. Yeah.
Yeah, they loved it later on, didn't they? The Works and all that.
Yeah. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Let's have another track then. What should we have?
If you see a UFO, who are you going to call? Nick Pope. I don't know if you know who Nick Pope is.
I don't, actually.
All right, okay. He's like one of the world's leading experts on UFOs. He used to work for the British Ministry of Defence, and was like the British version of Fox Mulder from the X-Files. He used to look after the British X-Files and UFO sightings. And basically, if you turn on the History Channel or Discovery Channel or any channel that has UFO documentaries on, he will be on every single documentary. It's like they bring him out, ex-MOD Nick Pope, and they'll give his opinion on UFOs. And he's a really nice chap and very knowledgeable on his subject. And I've recently interviewed him, actually, for a magazine that I write for. He reckons there's more to it than just unknown lights in the sky. And he's quite a sceptical, scientific person. But he says there's stuff out there in British, American, European airspace that basically the authorities are embarrassed about. There's no really a cover-up of it's cover-up of embarrassment. There's stuff in our airspace that they can't explain. It's not, you know, of a terrestrial origin. So it's all quite interesting, really. Anyway, I wrote a song about him because I think he needs a song.
Okay. So if you see a UFO, who are you going to call? Nick Pope.
Indeed.
My presence in this UFO documentary is mandatory. I was UFO desk monkey for the MOD. Now my face is all over the budgetary. And if
this is a UFO, who you gonna call? If this is a UFO, who you gonna call? Nick Pope. That's right, folks. Nick Pope and the pancake. And I'm shooting through with Colonel Holt, talking Rendlesham and sipping Moet. Just don't mention that fucking lighthouse. But if you see a UFO, who you gonna call? If you see a UFO, who you gonna call? Me, Nick Pope. Yes, me, Nick Pope. That's me, Nick Pope. That's me. And the aliens, if you have seen the truth, I'm like a low-budget Fox motor with a tiny spaceship on my shoulder. I've seen the truth and it gave me wings. And if you see a UFO, who you gonna call? If you see a UFO, who you gonna call? Nick Pope. That's me, folks. Nick Pope. Don't forget my name, Nick Pope.
So that was If You See a UFO, who you going to call? Nick Pope. And you want to find out more about Nick Pope, as you said, turn on the Discovery Channel. I might do that now and find out who the hell he is.
He wears glasses.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's going to narrow it down then. Yeah. Cool. All right, well, I think this has been very interesting. I hope you have a very nice acoustic gig at the Horn tomorrow. Yeah, and and this will be in the PCP following. And hopefully we'll get a few more people to go and buy some of those wonderful albums or buy that wonderful book. It's called Weird, The Life and Times of a Pocket God. I'll put a link in the show notes, of course, for anybody that wants to go and get it. And, yeah, thanks very much, Mark. I hope you've enjoyed having a chat. And hopefully we'll talk again soon. And, well, you've got four more albums coming out, so there'll be more stuff coming out on PCP in a very short space of time, I suspect.
Absolutely, I'll send you some tracks. Thanks,
Mark. Lovely. All right, thanks, Mark. Have a good day. Bye-bye. Talk to you again soon.
Never ran me back, and you got me wearing black. Remind me of the day I left you. Still remember our last night together. It's the nearest that I've ever been to heaven. Whoa, 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 yeah. I'm not coming back to the place that I once knew, where there's only me and you, and only the sky.
Telstar Girl, rounding off our interview and selection of music from the Pocket Gods. I hope you enjoyed what you heard. It certainly makes me smile, these guys. They're really good musicians, and I just love what they do. So just a reminder of the tracks. We started off with Perfect Blue before we got the interview, and then Mark told us about Moon, The Ballad of the Peshwari Nun, Jumble Party, Land of the Giants, Dan Brown in Town, If You See a UFO, Who You Gonna Call? Nick Pope. And then I chose Telstar Girl at the very end. Mark was saying, oh, we haven't played your favourite song, Pete. Well, we hadn't. And that is until now. So I shall sign off. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This has been Pete Cogle. This has been PCP 393. That was then. This is now.
Harder to forget. See, these days will turn out so much brighter. Thinking things I haven't even thought. I saw someone I thought was God. She got me thinking how. File away my blues. Dreaming about life, walking the borders. Sweat rains, blowing streams. Saw someone I thought was God. She got me thinking how. God.